F1, number 11A.
Now we have gone through the seven subjects of Amos and seeing that his prophecy has a very definite purpose, which he wants to bring out through these seven subjects, namely that six times you have to go around the wall of Jericho and find out the nothingness of error, and then on the seventh day, really, the walls fall and the victory is ours. He shows through these subjects how mind handles the belief in any opposite, how spirit handles and annihilates the belief in an opposite, and soul handles and annihilates the belief in an opposite, and so is principle and life and truth and love. And then, at that point, he can show that in the measure as we have handled error, we have done something positive. We have done something constructive and not something destructive. Not even something neutral, but something very constructive, because at the end we find how everything now is being built as in the days of old. So comparing the beginning with the end, can you hear me in spite of this noise? Yes? Not too well. Well, see the beginning, Amos shows how the Lord roars from Zion, and how through that power of the Lord he sees how all the habitations of the shepherds begin to mourn, and how the top of Carmel begins to wither, how everything proud and of the nature of pride begins to wither. The Lord now is at the helm. And then he shows through these seven subjects, step by step, how the Lord establishes his only power, his monopotency, by annihilating everything which is an opposite belief. And then at the end, we have just the very opposite in illustration. At the end he says, well, I will rise up the tabernacle of David. I will raise up the tabernacle of David. I will raise up the ruins. See? I will build it again as in the days of old. Just as saying, really, in between, nothing has happened from the positive standpoint, from the absolute standpoint. An idea has never fallen and has never to be raised up again. They shall build the waste city, they shall plant vineyards, they also shall make gardens. So you can see the frame within that prophecy is presented, the beginning, with that sense that nothing which is not of the same nature as God can stand before God. So that finally, if we go consciously through it, that finally only that which has been of old is established again in consciousness. And then he can see that the Lord will plant you firmly into the ground. And that from that point on, nothing can anymore uproot us. Giving a sense that the way how Amos handles evil is something which makes us firmer and grounds us on firmer ground, and that we always have made a step forward when we have handled evil in that way. So you can see why I tried to epitomize this Prophet Amos in the chart as A, C, you see, as A, as 1, C, in the column of 1, again is shown the monopotency, really, of God, good, in its office of C, Christianity, C, which renders the disappearance of everything which is opposite of God, which makes it to disappear, and renders the appearance of the true idea. The house of David will be constructed, and renders the appearance of the true idea inescapable. So you can see why I epitomized in the chart this prophet of Amos, giving us the sense of the world as Christianity, as the power of God, good, in its demonstrating office, as the disappearance of evil and the appearance of good. Is that clear why I epitomize it that way? And how it is a blending of the world as Christianity. So, always we find now through Amos, through the seven subjects, this very same law. You see, the subjects are so subordinate now in our consciousness, the moment we have found the standpoint within the 16. The moment we have found the law which says that God, the power of God, the only power of God, good, renders the appearance of good inescapable by bringing evil to disappear. And you say to disappear by making evil disappear. So, if we have found that, we really have found, so to say, the law of it, and the seven subjects which go through it are just a development of that idea. So, let's go through that law of Amos first in the, more or less, in the language or illustration of Amos, and then afterwards in its metaphysical terminology. He would show, you see, now I put instead of God, mind, the spirit, the synonyms, he would show that in the first subject, that really before the appearance of the power and might and will, divine will, of divine mind, all other so-called will, like human will, the lust of power, is forced to disappear. He shows how in his message to the seven surrounding countries, that their palaces will be burned because they were built with willpower, with the lust of power, with the lust of conquest. And so the divine mind always, I never get the right term, enforces, so to say, the disappearance of evil and the appearance of good. Then in spirit he has shown the same law again, and has shown how spirit, which is strength and purity, how spirit brings every false sense of strength, of material strength, of human strength, how it brings it to disappear, makes it disappear, so that only that strength of spirit reigns which was able to deal with the Amorites, who were as strong as the oaks and the cedars. And that all those warriors which believed in their human strength, in their muscular strength, in their that they all could no more escape and could no more stand before that strength of spirit. Then in Soul, he showed how God is Soul, and that Soul has the power of annihilation to everything which is unlike Soul. That he showed there that sense of identity which we had this morning, how Soul always brings to disappear all that which does not respond in agreement to God, but establishes all that which responds to to be a representative of Soul. Then in principle he had shown how principle is a law of annihilation to all that which is disobedient to the law and brings to obedience through his ways and means all Israel to be obedient to the law. Then in life he has shown that life through his Christ's power manifests itself always as a power to bring to naught every attempt to build up another sense of life than the divine life, to build up a sense of legal life, of political life, of economic life, of social life, even of religious life, and brings it right and makes those attempts null and void, so that only the Lord God, who is life, can reign. And then in truth he has shown that truth is the power which brings to annihilation all that is not according to the standard of truth, all that is not in line with the plumb line. All unrighteousness in Israel is there uncovered and brought to naught, so that only there was, I didn't take that passage, I just remember now, in that truth of that all is brought to the point of hungering for the Word of God, it said. And then in love, he shows that love is the law of annihilation to everything unlike love. And love is all, and therefore it shows that not the least remnant of error can escape, because love is so universal that if ever error is any way hidden far away, either in heaven or in hell, deep in the sea or fled away or hid in the forests of Carmel, love will fetch it, will get at it, and will destroy it. And there will be no remnant of error left, but each remnant of God will be reconstructed and we will re-established. The breaches in the house of David will be closed, the ruins of the house of David will be built up again, the gardens that have been withered will be planted again, everything is being reconstructed. That's the law of Amos. Now, I have tried to show it through the language of Amos, but again, see, when we come to science and to when we interpret the laws in its full sense of science, where we begin to see that mind is not just one or two ideas of mind, but where mind is the whole of mind and all mind, then we can broaden out this law and just see how Amos, who is the burden bearer, shows that the Lord really bears the burden of handling all the claims in Israel. And we have seen that Amos stresses very much that the Lord of which he is speaking is the Lord of hosts. See, many prophets speak about the Lord of hosts, but Amos makes a bigger stress on that. He speaks because he always says, and the Lord of hosts is his name. because, that's the point in it, because he begins to see and wants to show us that it is not only mind in one or two ideas or in one or two characteristics that he wants to depict, but the whole host of mind is at work, so that we can see really that the metaphysical law, we could perhaps formulate like this, that we could say mind and all its hosts, all its ideas, see, that mind and all its hosts are a law, or is, what would you say, the singular or plural, is a law of annihilation to everything unlike mind. See, that's the law now of Amos. We never heard that before, you see. Mind, a law of annihilation to its opposite. So, his law would be that mind and its hosts are a law of annihilation to everything unlike mind. He shows that spirit and its hosts is a law of annihilation to everything unlike spirit. That soul and its hosts is a law of annihilation to everything unlike soul. That principle and its host is a law of annihilation to everything unlike principle. And so is life and its host, and truth with its host, and love with its host is a law of annihilation to everything unlike life, spirit, and soul. Now that is put into a nutshell the law, but what does it mean? Now, that, you see, we are so fortunate that through many years we have learned the synonymous terms. If we wouldn't know what mind and its hosts were, we would just be talking words. It wouldn't mean very much or something very vague. But because we know quite a bit about mind and spirit and soul through its idea, we can enlarge and elaborate this law infinitely. We can not only say that mind and its host is a law of annihilation to everything unlike mind, but we can define now what this host, mind and mind's hosts are. The ideas of mind. And we can define what is unlike mind, because we also have learned all the opposites of mind. And so we have quite a big, big field of this one gentle, simple law. And I think it is especially this law which Mr. Dawley used most when he was speaking to us how he handles evil. When I saw Amos and what he said, I just couldn't help suddenly see, well, that was John Dawley was telling us over and over and over at various occasions. You remember how he would say, now it's very difficult for me to reiterate it, but you will remember it somehow, that he would not just say, perhaps when he was alone, and when he had for himself the sense of what all mind is, perhaps he would just say, well, mind is a law of annihilation to everything unlike mind. But when he is explaining to us what he means with it, he may say this. We may say this, that mind is creator. And so the creative sense of mind is always a power of annihilation to all the belief in an opposite sense of creative ability. The creative sense of that matter is creative, that the body is creative, that the human mind is creative. We've gone, mind is power, and therefore mind as power is always a law of annihilation to any belief which believes in the power of matter, in the power of human will, in the power of sin, in willpower, in the power of animal magnetism, in the power of spiritualism, in the power of hypnotism, and so on. You can go on, you see, nearly infinitely. And that's, I think when you remember, especially those, I think in the verbatim report 20 or 21 or so, he would use, you see, these, always, all the, as many ideas of mind and seeing that they are a law of annihilation to everything unlike that. Well, that is Amos. That's specifically the way Amos handles evil. And as you have been doing so much work yesterday, I would like to give you another a little work to do at home tonight. Try to do the law of Amos. See, the law of Amos, on which Mr. Dawley laid so much stress, and which he always begged us to consider and reconsider and use, and where he said, he so often said that he had seen the science of the Bible and of the textbook because he handled evil consecutively day in and day out through all the many years of his practice. And when he said how he would handle evil, naturally he did it in various ways. We have seen it perhaps in Hosea, but mostly he had shown it as the law of Amos. He didn't know it was the law of Amos, but that doesn't matter. The divine principle interprets itself to each one who listens. So it interpreted itself in the language of Amos, and it interpreted itself in the language that John gave it to us. But the main thing is that we begin to realize that the way John Dawley handled evil was not just his individual hobby about it, or his individual way about it, but that there is not his way of handling evil, but that it is principle's way of handling evil. That it wasn't something peculiar or unique to John. The only thing that was unique to John that he did it. And so that I like to see that it isn't personal, that it isn't something which is unique or specific for a person, but that he was voicing a law, a fundamental law that 2,500 years ago Amos was already knowing and trying to convey in his countryside language and to a country people, countrymen people and so on, whereas today we can broaden it out in its scientific language. So, do you know what to do tonight? See? I tell it to you again. Haven't I become quite patient in the last 10 years? I don't know myself anymore. But I will tell you why, because of Obadiah. So Obadiah will be the next one, and then you see why one can change. So Amos, again, once a while, be frank about the situation. So often I speak with people, and I must say to myself, that when I remember, say, John Dawley, either in Oxford or in any other talk or class he gave, when he did show us how he handled evil, we were always very impressed by it. Somehow the remembrance of it still stays with us, and we feel it's something big in it. But why should we have that attitude? It's a right attitude, but a very small and little attitude, because if we would have seen the signs of it, we could have done it since 10 years every day, that 3,650 times we would have already done it. And it would be so familiar to us that our way of doing it would be much nicer and bigger and warmer and stronger and more comforting than the remembrance how John did it 10 years ago. Isn't it so? But why haven't we done it? And I think it isn't because, well, there may be many, many reasons, because the human mind is apathetical to the nth degree, but also I found out very much that many students would like to do that, and are eager to do that, but they just didn't know how. they couldn't, I would say, recruit themselves, discipline themselves into one category. They would always go off right after the first three thoughts into another direction, into other dimensions. So it's good, you see, just as one goes into a recruiting service, one has to do day in and day out just the same movement. Always this, you see, or this, or that. Always the same for a whole day until you do it without knowing it. But that's good, you see. Then afterwards, when one is in the battle, one does that without knowing it. That's the purpose of this recruiting service. It's not, well, leave it at that. It's a long time ago anyway. But that's the training. And that training is that which John Dolly did with himself.